The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walzer, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Hey, everyone. I'm your host today, Danielle D'Souza Gill. I am still hosting for Dinesh while he's in Israel. He is having a great time, but he is almost back. So before you know it, he will be back to the podcast and you will have him back. But we have so many interesting things to talk about today. If you like the content that I'm putting out, make sure to find me on social media. I'm at Danielle D'Souza Gill on all the platforms, on Facebook, Instagram, Rumble, YouTube. But on Truth Social, I'm simply at Danielle. And on Twitter, I'm at Danielle D'Souza G, because they don't allow more characters. So make sure to find me on there. And today we're going to be talking to some really interesting people. We're going to talk to Kaia Jones, a former singer in the Pussycat Dolls. We're also going to talk to Julie Kelly, an author who has written about January 6th. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
Needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
The left has managed to cure cognitive dissonance. Haven't you noticed? For the past year or so, leftists have been monolithically pushing for war. War with Russia, war with Syria, war with China. Who could have thought that the party with a long historical record for being anti-war could turn on a dime and suddenly become pit bulls for the military-industrial complex? Think back on that long history. You have the anti-war demonstrations of the 60s and the repeated chants of no blood for oil during the Bush presidencies. And speaking of no blood for oil, you have to admire how the left has gone from occupying Wall Street to being sycophants for Wall Street. Leftists used to accuse companies of working for the man, but these days, it no longer matters how big and powerful these multinational corporations have become. In fact, the more ruthless and exploitative these corporations are, the more lefty fanboys seek for their approval. As long as these big corporations post a black square or indicate they're for social justice, they're good in the eyes of the left. Even though many of these companies use labor from overseas, don't compensate their workers in the way leftists say people should be compensated, and many of them receive tax breaks through loopholes because they're friends with rich and powerful Democrats. Look at the Foxconn plant in China, where the current spate of anti-lockdown protests started. Foxconn provides chips for Apple, and Apple helps Beijing crush its detractors by disabling apps. And these same bleeding heart leftists love Apple and its products. The latest iPhone is almost a necessity for every blue-haired protester in America. That Apple is a literal oppressor never enters into the equation. Not a single leftist experiences a microsecond of cognitive dissonance over these extreme and abrupt changes in attitude. What's their secret? Very likely, it's being utterly devoid of principle or a cohesive worldview guided by traditional norms of what's morally right and wrong. Many followers of leftism can't explain the cognitive dissonance, so they just ignore it. Standard leftist stuff. You would think the Democrat politicians know what they're doing. Well, not all of them. Joe Biden comes across like he has one of those old-timey video game cartridge slots in place where his brain should be. When his handlers need a new narrative to advance their agenda, they just swap out the programming. That's exactly how the same people went from no war for oil to obey Big Pharma. The media does the same thing, operating in lockstep and pushing one narrative, even if it's completely contradictory to what they said previously. That's only one of their big medical achievements. The other one is arguably even more groundbreaking, if you can believe it. And that's the development of the universal cure, death. No, not the universal cure for death. What I'm saying is that the left has discovered death is the one treatment that can cure all conditions. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, that sounds like the opposite of medicine. After all, isn't medicine all about alleviating pain and suffering with the goal of restoring the patient to a normal, healthy life as much as possible? But that would be too reasonable. That's just your old-fashioned belief in morality talking. Death is really the new hotness that everyone's talking about. The left has a strange love for death. Look at Canada. Since instituting its Medical Assistance in Dying, or MAID law, in 2016, the number of Canadians who have taken the cure has increased annually from over 1,000 in 2016 to over 10,000 in 2021. MAID deaths now account for 3.3% of all deaths annually. Not once to sit on their laurels, the Canadian government in 2021 dropped the requirement that there be a RFND, or reasonable foreseeability of natural death, in order to get the procedure. That is no longer needed. The current list of requirements dictate that you have to be enduring suffering and be eligible for publicly funded healthcare services. That second requirement stands out to most people. If the ostensible goal is to alleviate that intolerable suffering, why do you have to be on government healthcare? That would seem to imply that it's not medical assistance, but the government that's killing its own people, which is the textbook definition for democide, the number one cause of all deaths in the prior century, thanks to communism. So popular and effective is the universal cure, that starting March 17th next year, Canadian patients will be able to use it to alleviate their psychological issues. It's clear that the longer this law remains in effect, the more people will be able to take advantage of it. There are even ads now promoting the practice. Recently, a fashion chain ran an ad on Canadian TV featuring a woman who the government put out of her misery the day before the ad aired. And no, it wasn't Balenciaga that made that ad. Canadian doctors have discovered that a dead patient is a quiet patient. And so far, no one who has taken the death cure has complained about it. I think ultimately the left's goal will be to continue expanding the availability for elective democide until you can use it for anything. Will that wave of popularity carry it to the U.S. as well? After all, it's hard to think of a problem it can't solve. Take pregnancy, for example. Oh, wait, that type of cure is already available in the U.S., particularly in blue states, states like New York and California. You could say that the Canadian cure has been here for a while, but only applies to babies in the womb. But just think about the peace of mind you'll have when you can walk into a doctor's office with a cold, for example, and instead of being prescribed an expensive regimen of therapeutics and antibiotics, you can opt for the single-use cure-all death. Likely will be used often if there are psychological issues involved, as they said. Who doesn't want to see a doctor who has no qualms about taking the lives of his patients? This advancement wouldn't be possible were it not for the aforementioned cure for cognitive dissonance and its ability to wash away even the remotest doubts about unintended consequences. What could possibly go wrong?
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I'm excited to bring you my biggest bedding sale ever, just in time for Christmas. Get my Giza Dream bed sheets for as low as $29.98. A set of pillowcases, only $9.98. Rejuvenate your bed with a MyPillow mattress topper for as low as $99.99. We also have blankets in a variety of sizes, colors, and styles. We even have blankets for your pets. Get duvets, quilts, down comforters, body pillows, bolster pillows, and so much more, all at the biggest discounts ever. I know my bedding products are perfect for you, and I'm extending my money-back guarantee for Christmas until March 1st, 2023, making them the perfect gifts for your friends, your family, and everyone you know. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code and you'll get huge discounts on all MyPillow bedding products, including my Giza Dream bed sheets, for as low as $29.98. Get all your shopping done now while quantities last.
Aches and pains come to us all eventually, whether from the normal wear and tear of time or from injury. You have the choice to feel trapped by aches and pains, or you can fight back against it. The tools are different from a decade or more ago. Now there's 100% drug-free relief factor. I fought back with RF, and you can too. RF supports your body's fight against inflammation that is the source of aches and pains. About 70% of the over 500,000 people who try Relief Factor order more because it works for them. You have nothing to fear and everything to gain. Isn't it time for you to get out of pain? I've heard great things about Relief Factor from many people. If you know someone who has experienced aches and pains, this is the perfect gift for them. I know that my mother-in-law, who had an invasive knee surgery with a long recovery, tried Relief Factor and found that it worked wonders for her. You should give it a try too. Your first step to becoming pain-free just might be to order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That's relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246. Feel the difference. I'm delighted to welcome our guest today, Kaya Jones. Kaya is known for being a singer and artist. She rose to fame in the Pussycat Dolls, but she has since become a Christian music artist. She's known for dedicating her songs to Jesus. So, Kaya, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Danielle. I'm super excited to be with you.
Oh, my gosh. Well, it's always so much fun. We had such a great time being on Women for Trump together, traveling, and getting to speak to so many people around the country. How have you kind of been doing ever since 2016 and 2020?
I've been, you know, God is good. I definitely was shocked, like the rest of the country and world, at 2020. We worked really hard on that campaign. We felt like, you know, it was taken from us. And I think the country now sees that we had the best intention possible, and so did President Trump. Since then, I just put my faith in God. You know, it was just very disheartening to watch what we saw happen. And I went into Hebrew Bible school and went into ministry. I felt that, you know what, if we're where we were at the moment, we really needed God. So it was my then, you know, biggest call thus far in my career to really focus on getting the messaging of the gospel of Jesus Christ out to the world, and definitely to a lot of American families that just felt defeat on the highest level.
For sure. But Kaya, your story is so fascinating. So I want to ask you about that. So just kind of rewind to when you think back, what was it like being in the Pussycat Dolls, being kind of part of that industry before you became who you are today? What was that like for you?
Well, it was really rewarding. I mean, when it initially happened, like all I wanted as a little girl was to perform. You know, I definitely felt, wow, like I'm getting to do my dream. You know, my dream was to be one of the Spice Girls, and here I was in the Pussycat Dolls. What a moment. What I didn't kind of prepare myself for was truly the disgusting, sickening industry that has become very now exposed. I was not prepared for that. And it's a shame. There are great people in this business, and I'm finding them now in later years. But, you know, it was a lot of excitement, a lot of fame, unfortunately, a lot of abuse and a lot of mistreatment and very unscrupulous behavior in the back end.
Yeah. And before you got into that, I'm sure you wanted to focus on the singing and weren't maybe aware of that. So you found yourself in kind of that situation. When do you think you kind of maybe had like a wake up call of, you know, I don't know if this is the best place to be?
Truly, I'll never forget the moment. It was a moment. We were performing at Divas Live at MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas. It was going, you know, out to 30 million households around the globe. And it was a packed house of, you know, 23,000 people. And there were two little girls in the front row. And Patty was wailing on stage. And me and one of the other members of the group, we were to enter from the audience when the rest of the girls were coming up on a riser. And there were two little girls in the front row. And they just went, oh, she's a Pussycat Doll. You know, they had to have been no more than, you know, 4 and maybe 6 or 7 years old. And it just made me feel gutted, because at the time I was going through a forced abortion. At the time I did not want anyone, I didn't want to be me. So a little girl wanting to grow up to be me in that moment was just very disheartening. And I knew in that moment that I had a responsibility and that I couldn't do that any longer, that I needed a way out. Certainly, I was not a good role model for young women.
Wow. That is really just so inspiring, because I think so many people in that situation may not take a step back and think, let me try to change things and sing about other things. Do you think a lot of the women who are in those situations and experience that, I'm sure that they might feel similarly. They might feel like they don't like the situation they're in. They don't like feeling forced, like you mentioned, forced abortion, maybe forced relationships, things like that. Do you think it's just become so hard to leave the situation, just kind of the higher you get, the more entrenched it becomes?
Yes. I can actually confirm 100% you are spot on the money. I still talk to a lot of women that are very well known, some of them very popular currently, that have conveyed to me that they're not as strong as me. I'm not as strong as you, Kaya. I don't know how I'm going to pay my bills if they take, you know, my platform away from me. And they feel as though they will lose everything, because that is what you are. You know, you are essentially, and I use the description, Britney Spears has also used this description of feeling prostituted in a way, human trafficked in a way. You are owned by an institution, and they hold over your head your dream. And you have a, you know, family to feed, because most of us don't come from, you know, a lot of money or the opportunities to go into other areas. We have a gift and we're doing the best we can with it. And it's very scary to think, well, I can't, you know, pay my bills, or I won't be able to take care of my mom or my dad, or the, you know, more importantly, the fact that you have fans and you feel like you'd be letting them down. It's really sad that it's become that way, but I do believe we're going to see a shift. I think God is doing a mighty work, which is why exposing is happening now. And you're going to hear more. And it's going to shock the world when people start to understand this is very strategic. It's messaged to the children, and to get children sexualized very early. And that's strategically done. It's very much so they're thankful.
Right. And it seems like that sexualization has been happening for so long, but it continues to just keep getting worse. And now with TikTok and so many other things that are even targeted to younger kids to pull them in, you know, whether it's video games or whatever, things like that. I think it's hard for them to escape it. I guess if they have internet and a phone, it's basically impossible to escape. And so what do you think is kind of going to be underway for us? And like, what would you advise to Christian parents? Would you say to, you know, not kind of give them access to those things when they're kids? I mean, what do you think would be best?
They are is actually a disservice. You need to prepare children for what they're going to face and raise them up correctly in the Word of God. You know, when we have the Holy Spirit within us, it shifts the way we act. I thought I knew the Lord until I started working for Him, and I can assure you who I am now is not who I was at 19. And the strength I have now in my 30s, it really does say to me, like, wow, if I can be a vocal you know, singer for the Lord and very vocal about my political views and, you know, my moral compass, which comes from Jesus Christ, I truly believe that the youth need to have that installed earlier. Also, you know, the more that we expose this, it's not something that people can fear, because these people are sick. Whether it's the men that have these addictions to porn, which eventually leads to, because we know this, it leads to severe brain damage, and it also leads to what becomes pedophilia, because it has nothing to do with pornography. It has to do with control. If we actually expose this to the greater level and start to get the help needed from the men that have these addictions, then there wouldn't be a demand for this supply. And I truly feel we need to really rip the head off of this thing and get the messaging out and start to talk to men about how can they start to be vocal in the community to raise up a, you know, truly the next generation of young men that will be wiser, and young women that will hold themselves in a better light, more accountability, and more, you know, more couth and class, which we need to see in our culture.
Yeah. And I think it's also just, it's so crazy to think that the left is so triggered by so many other things that are really meaningless. But when you think about it, it's like, this is so harmful to people's minds, as you said. It's so harmful to their inner life, their soul, their relationship with God, their family, their maybe marriages and so on. And so it's really unfortunate that that's become so normalized. Do you feel like when you were kind of like more involved with Pussycat Dolls, things like that, that you saw them like pushing a lot of those things on women there? I mean, what was kind of like the line between, I guess, singing and then making things more sexual?
Well, I think, you know, from the beginning of time, people have pushed sexualization, especially when it comes to media, because, you know, as the quote would say, oh, sex sells or sexuality. But what it's turned into is young women want to be 12 years old, 15 years old. They're told that younger is better. Young men hear that, you know, they got to be young and stud. And, you know, you got to be like 18 to 19. So guys want to dress like they're young boys and they're not. Women want to dress like they're young girls and they're not. And the truth of the matter is there's something really awesome about aging. There's something really beautiful about a man in a suit that's grown up, that holds himself at a higher stature. And the same goes for women. But we've culturalized this push about keeping it so young, which is a form of pushing pedophilia. And it's just getting younger and younger. It is getting worse. I did see it at the time in the dolls. We saw with, you know, the Balenciaga stuff. That was appalling. And the fact that we still have really not heard Kim Kardashian really rebuke this company as a mother of four just shows you where their priorities lie is financial. It comes down to the financial gain. It has nothing to do with being a good leader or being a good, like, you know, you would think, I mean, I guess secretly I felt like, you know, even though she did porn to become famous, secretly I felt like, you know what, she became more of a businesswoman. She put herself out there. She was doing philanthropy work, working with, you know, prisoners who needed a second chance. But I mean, if you're giving more of a chance to prisoners, but not speaking out against what, you know, you're backed by this company that's showing four-year-old bondage. I mean, I don't know. Danielle, think about this for a second. You walk on a set and there's a four-year-old stretched across a couch, bondage gear, teddy bears, wine bottles, and you think this is a good idea to continue? Where were the people involved in this shoot not grabbing that kid and walking out? And furthermore, the parents, where are they? I feel like it's become such a yesterday story. And that's the problem. You know, they attack us, you know, talking about this until we get it a bigger message across that we're not going to allow this in our culture, period. End of discussion. And we're going to boycott it at all levels. That should be like the first stance. And I'm going to keep talking about it until something's done, because I just think it's lunacy that we're allowing it to just get pushed, you know, under the rug, because they're not going to stop. This is just, you know, I think we need to continue discussing it. And we're seeing more and more and more of this sexualization in the fashion industry, which is just kind of shocking, because, I mean, what does that have to do with the bag? What does that have to do with the pair of shoes? I mean, it feels like they're using, you know, pedophilia to sell, you know, something. They're selling something else, and they're pointing it into it's about a brand, but it doesn't feel like they're selling a brand. It looks like they're selling porn and pedophilia. It's not just pornography. It's pedophilia. It's towards children. And that's where, you know, what are we doing about that? Are we saying anything other than just like, this is a problem? Are we really going to take a stance and make them rue the day that they even conceived of putting a child in that situation?
For sure. And I mean, even just the name Balenciaga, it's like, I've seen so many things about the roots of that, God. And it's, you know, ball and evil and so on. And I know you mentioned Kim Kardashian, who rose to fame from her, you know, porn video. And it's so sad, because I think that could be even why she like revived that story in her recent season to like make it relevant again. Like, I don't know. It seems like it's something like she pretends she doesn't want to talk about, but then she like continues to keep on putting it out there.
They're bringing it into the news, but you know what? I think the problem is culturally, there's not a lot of other really great figures to look up to. So the culture looks kind of down, if you will, at, oh, this, you know, family that's kind of all over the place. But truly, just stop watching it. Stop buying those products. Stop watching it. Stop supporting it. Money is speech. And the moment that we start to really stand by what we believe in, and that's conservatives as well, because I see a lot of conservative young pages that think it's funny and cool to post some of these individuals. But truth of the matter is that if we don't kind of bundle together and really stand for our values as a community of believers, I don't think we're going to win this culture war, because it is a culture war, and the culture is pushing the narrative of pedophilia, and that's it. There should never be even a thought that that's kind of okay to do. It should be immediately shut down. And if it was, you know, Mike supporting the president, they would be on top of, you know, MyPillow, you know, having a problem with MyPillow. Meanwhile, they're pushing pedophilia. And again, we're not really driving home the message. It's just a story. It airs for about a week and then it gets burnt out because they have really good publicists that talk about other things and they hope that the story will blow over and you'll forget about it. But that's where we have to really say, I'm not going to forget about it. And I'm not going to support your brand. And that's where I'm done with it. Don't buy the magazines. Don't watch the shows. Hit them where it hurts. They'll lose the shows because it's ratings. And that's for sure. The bottom line is you can't, don't let it go further. And even if you're, you know, a Democratic parent or a libertarian and you're kind of like, oh, I don't really know. Listen, don't do it. It's not worth it. You have a responsibility to be a great parent. Show your kids the right thing. Do not support people that take money from pedophiles. And that's how I look at them now. I look at them completely differently than before. Not saying that her launch into success didn't come from one narrative. I'm just saying that I believe she became a businesswoman and she changed the narrative, but it seems that she's going right back to where she started. So
yeah. And there are so many articles out there showing kind of her, like, I don't want to say exploiting, but, you know, treating her daughters in ways that are basically using them for brand deals and her image and all those things. When her daughter North, like, multiple times says she doesn't want photos taken, things like that. She, like, continues to put her out in front of people because that's her business. Yeah, I think we can't support them. We can't support Belinda.
We can't
support their shows.
No, and you know, I told people a long time ago about what I endured in the Pussycat Dolls. You know, Robin Anton, who invented the Pussycat Dolls, who owned us, if you will, is best friends with Kim Kardashian. So I'm aware of who these people are. I think the world is just getting a good taste of really some of, you know, the backstory. You know, Kanye West talking about some of the stuff he talked about. I felt he was trying to pull focus media-wise, trying to flip the script so that you didn't talk about the Balenciaga stuff. But the root of it is, we should be praying for all these people, definitely not demonizing anyone, but I'm not going to continue to have a discussion with people who want to sit and, you know, do business with people who are into pedophilia. And she needs to condemn it. I mean, that's it. Condemn it. And we then will see that, you know, you're not standing up for that kind of stuff and you can continue to do your shows and maybe we'll watch you. But I have no desire to ever watch a Kardashian episode ever again. I definitely didn't really watch them before, but now it's just put a bitter taste in my mouth where I don't want anything to do with any of those fashion brands, especially the company that owns them. You know, they don't just own Balenciaga. It's a very massive conglomerate that owns a lot of other brands. And as Christian women, why are we wearing these companies that have these names on them? Do we really know anything about these brands? You know, that's the question I have. And I think a lot of Christians fall into this slump of, oh, well, you know, we want to dress nice and, you know, wear this fashionable stuff, but what's the price? Are we idolizing these institutions that really are not so good and definitely not what we put our faith into?
Yeah. And once you do know, like, you do know Balenciaga is bad, then, of course, like, you shouldn't be wearing it or buying it and things like that. And I think it's there are so many brands like it that then people think, well, what is left? Because so many are the worst. So I just always feel like I have, like, a list of the worst ones. The one that, you know, like, obviously doing that with children is completely unacceptable. So that's, like, a hard no. But if a certain brand, like, doesn't talk about politics, I'm like, okay, like, that's, like, I'm not going to be upset with you for that. But exactly. If you want to make everything evil, then obviously I want nothing to do with it. But it is so hard sometimes for people to find like a brand that actually espouses your values. That would be, I think, so difficult.
I think that's where we should come up with our own things and start to support one another and, you know, come up with the high-end fashion stuff, come up with the cool films, come up with the great music, start to take, you know, and this is where conservatives need to stop being conservative. Start funding those that believe in the things that we care about. Start helping the small business owners, the fashion girls who are Christian, you know, fashion forward Christian girls. There are many of them that I personally know who could put together an awesome line, but they don't have the funding. And so this is where conservatives really have to say, you know what? Why are we funding some of this other stuff? Why are we just being so conservative that we're not helping our people move forward? And I think we're past just the conservatives. I think this is a movement of good versus evil. And you see people that are libertarian on the left even saying they're not okay with this. And I think this is why it's shaking things up. But they kind of thought Trump was just this, you know, this right wing thing. And it's like, no, it's just, you know, do the right thing, bottom line. And when your values start to shift into the right pendulum, you'll vote differently. You'll think differently. And I do think that's a God thing. Personally, I do believe that, you know, the Holy Spirit convicts you and you just start to go, you know, I'm not okay with that. I was okay with a lot of things before. I'm not okay with them now. And I have friends that are like, but you used to support this. And I'm like, yeah, but you know what? God changed my heart. And there's no way I can get behind that. Like, I can't get behind drag queen story hour. That to me is like, what are you doing?
Totally.
I can't get behind that. I mean, you know, as much as I have friends who are gay, we're like, but you used to support us. Yeah, I did. But there's a line and you crossed it. Sorry, guys, you crossed it. And I'm not going to change my Bible standards to fit your narrative, because that's the problem. We're bending God's word to fit the world, and it's meant to transform the world. So we just got to put a hard no, and that's it.
Definitely. Well, Kaya, thank you so much for your thoughts today. I really appreciate it. And I talk to you again soon.
Yeah, love you, girl. Thanks.
Thank you. A food shortage could be coming to the U.S., according to experts. Drought, inflation, and new policies are pushing America's food supply near its breaking point. That's why survival food is more important than ever. Create your own stockpile of the best-selling 4-Patriot survival food kits. It's not ordinary food. We're talking good for 25 years survival food. Handpicked right in a family-owned facility in the USA and giving jobs to over 200 Americans. The kits are compact, sturdy, water-resistant, and stack easily. They have delicious breakfasts, lunches, dinners. You can make these meals in minutes. Just add boiling water, simmer, and serve. Go to 4patriots.com and use promo code Dinesh, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase on anything in the store, including this 3-month survival kit. All guaranteed for an entire year after your order, plus free shipping on orders over $97. A portion of every sale is donated to charities who support veterans and their families. Go to 4patriots.com, that's 4 like the number, patriots.com, and use promo code Dinesh for 10% off. That's 4patriots.com, promo code Dinesh. Julie Kelly is a senior contributor for American Greatness and author of the book, January 6th, How Democrats Used the Capitol Protest to Launch a War on Terror Against the Political Right. She's a frequent guest on national cable and radio news programs. Julie, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Danielle. Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. Well, I am very excited to talk about this because I feel like even though we've talked about January 6th before, there is so much more to dive into there. And I know you've been very on this beat for a long time. So when you thought about writing this book, what kind of inspired you to want to dive into this topic in more detail?
Such a good question. And I can't believe it's been almost 2 years. What a crazy the time, but I think just from, I wanted to sort of collect a lot of my reporting that I had done over really starting on the day after January 6, 2021, and really, Danielle, tell the stories, more importantly, of the American citizens, the Trump supporters, who are being hounded, harassed, interrogated, have their homes raided, and really legally tormented by the Biden regime in an effort to retaliate against people who protested what they believed was a rigged election in 2020. So that really tells us most of what the book is about. But also, and you know, I finished the transcript for the manuscript. Here we are a year after I completed the book, still unanswered. And I think since that point, Danielle, a lot of new questions have been raised, especially about the lack of security that day and federal involvement in the events of January 6th.
Yeah, for sure. And not to give away the secrets inside, but what is kind of your take or your findings on the federal involvement in January 6th? Because I think there was federal involvement, but to what degree was that? And is there a certain kind of angle that you take on that?
Well, my book starts to address the questions about the FBI's possible involvement. And a lot of it, Danielle, related to what I was also covering at the time, which was the plot to kidnap and kill Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. As I was writing this book, the defendants in that case, the defense attorneys, were putting together this shocking bombshell defense of FBI entrapment. And I was, as I was reading and covering what was happening in that case and all of the motions and all of the evidence that talked about more than a dozen FBI informants on top of undercover agents, on top of supervising agents working out of numerous FBI field offices in the eastern part of the country, I started to think, well, how could the FBI be doing this and have nothing to do with January 6th? And there were a lot of ties, not the least of which was the storming of the Michigan Capitol in Lansing in April of 2020, which looked a lot like what happened on January 6th of 2021. And so I think that that really started to foment my thoughts and others. There was a much bigger federal involvement and much bigger federal presence than we were being led onto. And now, of course, as the trials are getting underway, Danielle, we see confirmation in just the past month, confirmation of several FBI informants embedded in the Oath Keepers, one of the alleged militia groups involved in January 6th. Those informants were embedded in that group months before January 6th. Now we have evidence of at least eight FBI informants in the Proud Boys, the other militia group, really tied to January 6th, at least eight FBI informants also embedded months before January 6th. So the question, there's really two questions, Danielle. The FBI had all these informants in these groups months before January 6th. Why didn't they alert law enforcement?
Why didn't they try to stop it? I mean, isn't that the purpose of infiltrating a group if that's the like national security goal?
Right, because informants and their handling agents have very close contact. So if you had at least, you know, more than a dozen in these two groups, including one who was the number two of the Oath Keepers, the vice president, if he was not telling his handling agents, or you had all of them not saying anything, then how can they be blamed for what happened on January 6th? Why didn't they share that? Or, Danielle, is it what I suspect is that the FBI assets were embedded? They were there to sort of instigate any heated rhetoric on encrypted chats or on social media or in videos that would be used as evidence, which it was, and sort of instigate a lot of what happened before January 6th and on that day. So we didn't see a lot of that come out in the Oath Keepers trial. The defense attorneys were a little bit more hesitant, I would say. But I think in the next trial of the Proud Boys, which starts in a few weeks, I think you're going to see a lot more aggressive attempt to expose the FBI's, you know, what the FBI did, especially in this group, the Proud Boys, before and on January 6th.
Yeah. And why do you think there will be that difference between the Oath Keepers trial and the Proud Boys trial? Why do you think the Proud Boys one might expose the FBI more?
I just think it's a difference in approach. Look, the Proud Boys, I think, are more publicly well known. And so I think that they just happen to have some more aggressive attorneys. I think the attorneys who represented the Oath Keepers did a good job. But I think that they thought that the case against their defendants was already so weak that they really didn't have to go for the jugular. The difference, too, of course, I can't say difference. They both have terrible judges who are acting as nothing more than a rubber stamp for the government. But in the Oath Keepers case, you had Amit Mehta, who was an Obama-appointed judge, who really stopped the defense at every step of the way in trying to get information to the jury that would prove that their clients were innocent. And so they were up against a big barrier there. I think the attorneys in the Proud Boys are up against a very similar judge, even though he was appointed by Donald Trump. He's been no less compliant to the government. But I do think the defense attorneys are pushing back a little bit harder because the government held this information about FBI informants from the defense for over a year. So they are not very happy about that.
Wow. And that's so disheartening to hear that Trump-appointed judge is not much different than the Obama-appointed judge. So that's too bad. But when you look at some of these trials, some of the judges involved, you find a lot of it does come down to what judge that they get and the political leanings of that judge oftentimes.
I wish that there was a difference between judges who were appointed by Donald Trump, who said that they had loyalty to the Constitution and that they would protect the Constitution, because they have not. Danielle, the Trump-appointed judges are as disgraceful as the Obama-appointed judge, not just Judge Tim Kelly, who's the judge in the Proud Boys case, but also Dabney Friedrich, Trevor McFadden. They have all held defendants, denied them bail, even though they committed no violent crime, have no criminal record, or even if they are accused of, say, attacking police officers, completely eliminating the presumption of innocence. Because, look, all these judges live and work in Washington, D.C. It's a very tight-knit group. Their kids go to schools together. They belong to the same clubs. And especially disheartening for the Trump judges is that a lot of them, Tim Kelly, Trevor McFadden, and were moved basically right from the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office to the federal bench. Well, that's the exact same office that's prosecuting all the January 6th defendants. When they call it the swamp, Donald Trump called it the swamp, it's actually far worse than that. It's more of a sewer. And when these people, all, whether they get appointed by a Republican or not, they are going along with DOJ. They believe that this was an insurrection, and they are going to help the government prove this to the public and punish these people for daring to enter their personal and professional fiefdom of Washington, D.C.
Wow. And, you know, D.C., it is such a swamp, and it's so sad that they're being tried there, because it's really not a jury of their peers. It's not fair, because a lot of the people there are very different than the people on trial. And when you kind of were diving into some of their stories in the book, did you notice that it was just such a big contrast between the people who were being tried and the kind of people in D.C.?
Well, Danielle, when my book was finished, there had not been a single trial yet. There had been a lot of hearings for pretrial detention. There had been some plea deals. So I'd seen and heard what these judges were already doing, denying bail to nonviolent offenders, berating them in sentencing hearings for plea arrangements. But the first trial didn't start until March of this year. And keep in mind that every single judge has denied every single change of venue motion, even though you're talking about jurors from a city that voted 93% for Joe Biden. Almost everyone who lives in Washington is tied to the federal government. They are, you know, fixated, obsessed by the topic of January 6th. I don't think anyone really in the country is watching the January 6th committee hearings except the people who live there. But these judges insisted that through the jury selection process, they could find a fair jury. Now, until the Oath Keepers trial, where there were some mixed verdicts, I think DOJ, out of maybe, I believe, over a dozen jury trials with numerous counts, was undefeated. I think that there was one acquittal on an obstruction count. Other than that, these jurors have come back in record time, all guilty verdicts on every single count. There were some acquittals in the Oath Keepers case, but two convictions of seditious conspiracy. Danielle, no American citizen has ever been convicted of seditious conspiracy, but a D.C. jury found two of these men guilty. It's just... it's a legal and judicial circle of hell for these people that they cannot escape.
Wow. And when you were rewinding to when this was all happening and you were thinking about covering this more, what were you thinking at the time and what kind of inspired you to want to begin writing about this topic, even as a reporter and with articles?
That's a good question. So I didn't really see the events of January 6th like a lot of people did. I wasn't horrified. I wasn't alarmed. I thought it looked very out of place. I also thought, well, of course you're going to have people who are very upset. They've been locked down since the spring of 2020. They went through riots where then suddenly they were told it was okay to violate social distancing as their cities and neighborhoods were being burned down with no culpability, with no accountability. And so, of course, people were angry after 2020 and then the rigged election, the outcome, and no recourse for any relief, whether it was in the court system or in state legislatures or anywhere else. You had a lot of unhappy, angry Americans. So I thought, well, you know, this is sort of what's going to happen when your government takes on this tyrannical approach. But really afterwards, I started seeing what Biden's DOJ was doing. And that was going to D.C. judges asking for incarceration, pretrial detention, which means denying bail. For even the first article I wrote was Cui Griffin, who was a commissioner in New Mexico. He never even went inside the building. He was charged with two or three misdemeanors, but DOJ went to a judge and asked for him to stay in jail, denied bail, which is exactly what happened to him until I think 20 some odd days later, he was released. And so that really sparked my interest. I opened an account on Pacer, which is where you can find all the legal filings. Because it was COVID, I could listen to the hearings in Washington, D.C. And just every day was a new shock to me that this was happening in America. And so I think that's really what prompted my telling the stories or covering the stories of what was happening to J6ers, really initiated my work on January 6th, but then also trying to uncover exactly what happened and all these unanswered questions that we still don't have answers to.
For sure. And what have you noticed to be the pulse as far as more of the Republican politicians? How have they been responding to January 6th as of late? Because I know at the time many of got freaked out and they denounced it and they really wanted to distance themselves from it. And I think since many people have realized what's been happening to the prisoners and also the unfair treatment and the nonviolent involvements. So has there been any shift amongst the Republican kind of elected people? Do they feel more sympathy for the January 6thers or are you finding they kind of still aren't really having much sympathy?
I think almost all of them want to totally avoid the subject. When I started covering this in 2021, I couldn't get really any Republicans to talk to me about this. And then there were a handful, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Paul Gosar, Louie Gohmert, Andy Biggs, a handful who reached out to me and were very alarmed at the holding of political prisoners in this D.C. jail. I call the D.C. gulag. But you could see a lot of this shifting, Danielle. Now it's not just about the political prisoners. the unfair, egregious treatment of January 6th defendants by the Department of Justice. Now people have real questions. They are starting to smell a rat. They want to know why the 14,000 hours of surveillance video almost 2 years later is under very strict protective orders asked for by Capitol Police and DOJ. They want to know why the pipe bomber hasn't been located. You know, this set off the first wave of panic that day, prompted the first evacuations of nearby House office buildings. Yet they've used every surveillance tool, investigative tool in the book, some they're not even allowed to track down Capitol trespassers, but no pipe bomber, which is especially odd because Kamala Harris was in the DNC headquarters when this alleged explosive was found. They have completely lost interest in that. We don't even have an update from the FBI. The January 6th committee has completely ignored it. And I do think people are extremely suspicious as we hear bombshell from bombshell about what this FBI is capable and willing to do to interfere in our presidential elections, to go after Donald Trump, to sabotage the entire MAGA movement, and, you know, just the revelations this week about FBI's in cahoots with big tech to silence and censor the Hunter Biden laptop coverage. I think people now are really starting to think if the FBI will do all of that to protect Democrats and go after Republicans, then why wouldn't they be majorly involved in orchestrating and executing January 6th?
Yeah, they're so political. It's so crazy to think, because even just before Trump, I'm not sure how many people knew about the FBI being like this. I mean, when we think back to the Obama days, I don't know if people knew that the FBI was so political, but I think so many people said Trump would expose a lot of this, and we had no idea just how much he would expose or would be exposed through kind of the entire movement, the MAGA movement that you mentioned. But when you think about them infiltrating into some of these January 6th groups, things like that, and maybe even instigating some of it, egging people on, things like that, do they have any kind of punishment for doing that? Or are they kind of just allowed to push things as far as they want because they have protection?
They have. I mean, I think the fact that no one was held criminally responsible for the biggest legitimate conspiracy, and that was the Russiagate hoax, the Crossfire Hurricane investigation launched by Obama's FBI in 2016, that no one was ever held criminally responsible for that, just put this all on steroids. So the FBI and DOJ and the media saw nobody would be held responsible. People who were involved went off and got great lucrative book deals, and they got gigs on MSNBC and CNN, and guys like Andy McCabe, who was, you know, basically found to have lied to his own FBI investigators under oath. He got his pension back and all of his benefits as soon as Biden took the presidency. So there is no holding anyone accountable. And the problem there is then it just emboldens them. And that's what brought us the Whitmer Fednapping hoax. And that's what brought us January 6th. Now, Republicans, I think now versus 2017, when you really had one guy, Devin Nunes, who was uncovering all of this and actually aggressive and understood early on what had happened with Russiagate. And he was thwarted by his own political party, including his own political leaders. Right. I think it's a different environment right now. They have years now of documentation, a trove of evidence that proves how corrupt and partisan this FBI is. We have whistleblowers now finally very bravely coming forward and talking about what's happening inside the Bureau, not just at headquarters, but at all of these field offices. And so it's unavoidable now. There is a mountain of evidence. Republicans have to deal with it. They recognize that their window will be very short, because public pressure is building, evidence is there, and they also have the power of the purse. They need to start cutting funding to, say, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia, which is a Democrat prosecutor. He is doing nothing but spending all of our money and all of his time, and I think over 100 federal prosecutors, to chase down Trump supporters. That funding should be eliminated. also drastically cutting the FBI. I know people have suggested like a church commission sort of thing for more reforms. I don't think the Bureau is salvageable. But the American people need to hear what's happening to people at the hands of this FBI and hear directly from these officials who need to explain themselves for what they've done.
Well, Julie, it's been so fascinating talking to you. The book is called January 6th, How Democrats Used the Capitol Protest to Launch a War on Terror Against the Political Right. Good luck with the book tour, and I appreciate it.
Thanks, Danielle. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. There's no question America is in decline. Crime and inflation are skyrocketing. It seems daunting, but don't lose hope. If you're a senior, you remember better than anyone how strong America can be when we work together. That's why I urge you to join forces with AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. Becoming a member of AMAC is easy, and it only costs $16 per year. Go to amac.us/Dinesh to sign up today. Debbie and Dinesh are proud members of AMAC. You should be too. Go to amac.us/Dinesh now. Will the absence of a red wave during the midterms lead to a more emboldened Biden? More pork barrel spending, higher taxes, a deepening of inflation? If you're unsure how the next 2 years will unfold, talk to Birch Gold Group about protecting your savings with gold. That's why I buy gold from Birch Gold, and you can too. Birch Gold makes it easy to convert an IRA or 401k into an IRA in precious metals. That's right, they'll help you own gold and silver in a tax-sheltered account. Here's what you need to do. Text Dinesh to 989898 to claim your free info kit on gold, and then talk to one of their precious metals specialists. They will hold your hand through the whole process. Protect yourself with gold today by texting Dinesh to 989898. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and thousands of happy customers, Birch Gold is who I trust to protect my future and yours. Text Dinesh to 989898 today.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.